You're listening to Innovation for Alpha, where we explore everything at the intersection of healthcare innovation and finance. Through our discussions and interviews, we keep you informed and educated about healthcare innovations, next-level venture investing, and everything involving the combination of the two.
Hi, everybody. This is Tobin Arthur with the Innovation for Alpha podcast, and I'm joined today by a special guest here in Colorado, Brian Campbell, who is the CEO of the Colorado Medical Society. And Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Tobin.
Well, it's fun, Brian. I've gotten to know you over the last year or so, and you are, although at this point not new, you know, in the scheme of things, still newer to the Colorado market, having come here a couple of years ago. But give everybody a little sense of your background. How did you end up here? What did you do prior to Colorado? And then, you know, give us a little bit of the state of the union.
Sure. So, you know, the crazy thing about some of these jobs is, you know, who knew that there was such a thing as the CEO of the Colorado Medical Society? So I took the standard path of starting out in school as a mechanical and nuclear engineering major, detoured from that, and went into broadcast television, where I was in television association management, essentially, for 14 years, being a producer and executive producer at television stations from Nebraska to Oregon to Jacksonville, Florida. And then ultimately in 2006, I made the transition into professional physician association management, started for a national specialty society, the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, which is a mouthful. We just call it ACE. Worked with ACE for 6 years, then became the CEO of the Duval County Medical Society, which is based in Jacksonville, Florida, and then ultimately moved here to Colorado as the CEO of the Colorado Medical Society in January of 2020, where I just basically figured where the exit doors were and the bathrooms were before the COVID pandemic hit, and really have been dealing with that a lot ever since.
What an incredible background. And just real quick, for those people not familiar, the Duval Medical Society in that county, this is not just a small little operation. I mean, on the scheme of things, this is one of the larger groups in the country, correct?
Yeah. So in Jacksonville, we have more than 2,000 members in the Duval County Medical Society, making it larger than actually several state medical societies. So it was a really large operation and organization there, well-respected and a really great organization. And it really helped me get an understanding for what some of the needs were for larger membership organizations like the Colorado Medical Society.
So that's incredible, the jump to healthcare and medical from broadcasting. What was the impetus for that?
Well, you know, I wanted to get out of television for a myriad of different reasons. It's an interesting industry to say the least, but you know, I really wanted to focus on communication skills and using those in a setting. And so at ACE, I was the National Director of Public and Media Relations. And so that skill set I found was very useful when you are in television. You are trying to entertain the audience, even in news. There's an aspect of trying to make sure that the viewers turn in, making sure that people want to watch. And so using some of those skills, we were able to draw a lot of attention to some of the initiatives that we did with ACE. Got to do some really fun things. We partnered with the Biggest Loser show and Bob Harper, the trainer from that show, for some diabetes awareness initiatives. Got to work with several celebrities on our Thyroid Awareness Month campaigns. So that was really an exciting utilization of the skills that I had in television, but that I thought were helping people a little bit more. And that was something that I wanted to be able to do.
It makes a lot of sense. And you are a terrific communicator, and Colorado is fortunate to have you. Talk a little bit about some of the things. So you bring a very entrepreneurial perspective, is the way I would categorize it. When I hear you think about the things that you're trying to accomplish for the society and where you want to take it, you know, you're always thinking about outside the box. How do we better serve the current members? How do we pull in new members? When you got here, talk a little bit about some of the things as you assessed the landscape and said, here's the things I want to shore up. Here's the things I want to focus on. What did that look like? And what's that looked like over the last couple of years as you've been getting settled?
Yeah, it's a really intriguing question because the model of a medical association really is more than 200 years old. Most medical societies were founded on some version of physicians wanting to come together to help the physicians of the community provide better care. And, you know, that was before there were public health departments. That was before we had state agencies to control such things. And so as those state agencies came into place, the impetus and the need for the medical society has changed over time. There was a time when most medical societies were involved in credentialing physicians for hospitals, for example. And that has gone by the wayside. And so now the idea is that where 30, even 20 years ago, physicians often joined the medical society because they were supposed to, because their peers did. Now it's a different landscape. And most people, not just physicians, most people have a different take on the value of their time and the value of their money, obviously, and what is the value proposition of joining an organization. So some of the things that medical societies have been doing literally for 200 years just don't have the same impact on encouraging people to join as they did in the past. So you asked about innovation, and I think that's one of the ways in which we really need to embrace finding out what it is that physicians want and need and engaging in those things. Now, interestingly enough, we started this in early 2020, really focusing on the great work of Simon Sinek and Start With Why. Because in that book and in that TED Talk, Simon really shares why people make consumer decisions. And it's based on the way that they feel, not on what you can put on paper. And I think that medical societies have a real rich tradition of saying, look at all of the benefits that we give you. You get X amount of value for Y amount of dues dollars. But that isn't really how people's heads are wired. So we actually, interestingly enough, we had a full staff retreat in February of 2020, where we really dug into the Start With Why concept and focusing on what do members need and why do they need us. And then just a few weeks later, the world shuts down with the COVID-19 pandemic. And we were immediately faced with a test of those principles that we talked about. What do members need right now? So one of the first things that we did is we established a statewide base camp group for all physicians, regardless of membership, because the need that was happening at that time for effective communication was so great that there needed to be a central repository in place where any physician could come and be a part of the discussion, get information that they needed, be a part of a community where they can share struggles, exchange resources, et cetera. So out of that, we put together a consortium that was able to acquire PPE equipment when people were struggling to find it and distribute that throughout the state. We actually had a PPE distribution network that we just shut down in December of last year, but actually went for, you know, an entire year and a half as people were struggling to get that PPE. That's not in the playbook of a medical society, but it's what our members needed at the time. We were doing weekly town halls to provide education to members and working with, you know, representatives from state and national government that could help provide information to our members that we could be the conduit for that. And that was just based on listening to our members and understanding what was important to them. So there are a lot of other examples of that. We could talk about it a little bit more, but I want to make sure that you have the time to ask all the questions you want as well. But hopefully that just gives an example of how we're trying to look at innovating and being different and continuing to use that focus of starting with why and meeting members' needs.
It's an incredible example. And, you know, and it is an example of, as you said, thinking outside the box, the traditional medical society, that's not what they probably would have viewed their role as, but I love that. Maybe for those not familiar, talk a little bit about some of the things that a state medical society in particular does typically focus on, which legislation and working with government is a part of that. Maybe talk a little bit about that role, because I know you still fulfill that very important function.
Absolutely. So a lot of people don't realize that about 80 to 85% of the laws that govern the practice of medicine actually happen at the state level, not the federal level. Mm-hmm. You know, the federal level is obviously very important with the Medicare program, but most of the rules that govern healthcare are at state level. And every year we see dozens. I think this year it was 90 something bills that in some way have an impact on the delivery or potential impact on the delivery of healthcare in the state. It may be changing the roles of who can do what kind of procedure and what kind of training may or may not be needed to do that kind of procedure. It may be rules around the protection of the medical malpractice environment and medical liability environment in the state, which helps keep costs of care lower. It may be around which services should be covered in insurance. And there are just many, many different aspects to healthcare that are governed by the state that every year, some great, some not so great, bills are introduced. And we really have to be the resource for legislators to help them know and understand the potential impact that, that these laws will have, not only on physicians, but ultimately their patients. So that's a huge, huge part of what we do. In addition, we are also the largest provider of medical education for the state of Colorado. Continuing medical education is something that all physicians have to have for maintenance of certification and other aspects. Several states use it for license renewal in the state. That is not a requirement in Colorado. But regardless, we are the largest provider of CME in the state. And not only in the state, but we also provide CME in multiple other states, including Wyoming, Idaho, and Kansas as well. So that is a huge part of what we do. And ultimately, that helps keep our physicians educated and up to date on the latest goings on in healthcare. So beyond that, we obviously have our board is very robust in policy setting around issues that affect the delivery of healthcare and the healthcare environment. We also have a very strong engagement with the American Medical Association, which does lobby for a lot of those national issues. And so we have a very strong delegation from Colorado that participates in the American Medical Association House of Delegates. And so that's a really, really key factor of what we do. And then ultimately, we go back to that innovation thing. What do physicians need? There is a community of physicians that need to have an opportunity to get together, sometimes professionally for networking, sometimes just to have someone that you can talk a common language to that maybe just isn't the one that's in the office next to you. And so we provide a lot of opportunities for physicians to be able to get together socially. Now, I should say traditionally, we provide a lot of opportunities. That's been difficult over the last 2 years, but we're working to get back to that. But also we're looking to, going back to the word innovate, and I appreciate you bringing that up, we're looking to innovate and find other ways that we can engage. So currently we have just launched a 5-year strategic initiative to help improve diversity, equity, and inclusion at the Colorado Medical Society and our membership. We know that there are health equity issues in the state of Colorado and that health outcomes really have challenges around different DEI elements. But in addition, the membership of Colorado Medical Society and really the physician population in Colorado can be more diverse. There is opportunity to be more welcoming and to make a community that that is more diverse. And that goes hand in glove with the opportunity to provide better health outcomes. You see that more diverse physician populations have better health outcomes in diverse populations. So that's something that we're working on. Like I said, a 5-year plan. And part of that is really trying to help provide education to physicians on how to be more culturally competent in providing healthcare. So that's a huge initiative that we're working on right now, not only to help improve health outcomes, but really to help our community be better. Another area that we're really focusing a lot of effort and attention on is around physician well-being. So it's no surprise everyone has had struggles around mental health and mental wellness over the last few years, but physicians have the highest suicide rate of any profession in America right now. Above and beyond that, burnout and stress is the number one reason why physicians leave the practice of medicine before their anticipated retirement age. We're seeing a real struggle and a shortage of physicians. And, you know, if you have that pressuring you on one side, and on the other side, you have physicians that are retiring early, that could be a real crisis for the healthcare system in Colorado. So we are working to create a series of initiatives around physician well-being. From a very small level, we are doing around the state just living room wellness sessions where physicians can show up in a completely anonymous setting. And it's a very small group facilitated conversations in living rooms where people can just have facilitated discussions and just have the opportunity to share some of those. That's for early intervention, someone that's just having a bad day or something like that. We're also working to put together a statewide physician well-being program based on the LifeBridge model, which is used in several states and counties nationally, which will provide preclinical counseling or coaching, rather, for physicians who may not have a clinical depression or, you know, full-fledged burnout or something, but know that they need to talk to somebody and they need access to care. And they don't, and they're concerned about going to a counselor or something that would impact their licensure status or that would be known to their employer or something like that. So we're putting together this free anonymous program for physicians to participate in to just provide another level of service to physicians as well. So those are some of the things that we're focused on right now, but mostly we are just continuing to listen and try and understand what those needs are, you know, the start with why again. Why do physicians want to join? What motivates them? And what can we do to provide them that feeling of community, belonging, and inclusiveness that makes them want to be a part of the society?
It's great stuff. There's a lot to unpack there. Maybe a future conference, we can talk about some of the legislative things, because I think that's a whole world that most people don't understand. How do you even integrate with that group and try to influence it to the benefit of your physician members? On the stress front, there's a physician in Seattle, he's an orthopedic surgeon, has done a lot of really great work. He's written a book on this. And I remember an example he told me when he does a surgery or a surgeon does a surgery, he said he might make 10,000 moves in that surgery. And all it takes is for one wrong move to have a pretty significant impact on that patient's life. And he said, unfortunately, in this litigious environment, he is discouraged from discussing that because that creates liability and so forth. And so that gets bottled up. And so the next surgery, he gets to the particular move where he had made the mistake and he's thinking about that. He's stressing about it. And now a 1 hour surgery has the physical and mental impact of a 4 hour surgery. And he says, wait, over years, this just creates enormous stress and fatigue on the physician. It's really an unfortunate, you know, byproduct of the whole industry that a lot of people don't recognize or understand because they just don't understand what the physicians go through. So I applaud you guys on anything you're doing in that regard. Let's talk a little bit about your membership. You know, physicians also come in lots of different practice environments. So there's physicians in hospital settings who are employed. There's independent physicians. Certainly in Colorado, we have our share of urban centers that are concentrated, but then plenty of rural as well, spread out. How do you go about trying to create an environment and address the needs of the physician that might be on the western side of the state versus the eastern side and in large environments versus, you know, the smaller independent practices? That's a tough role because they're in such different environments. How do you think about that?
Well, it's the question for state medical societies across the country. The fractured nature of membership makes it difficult to determine what that value proposition is. So especially when you look at the employed physicians, I'll start there. It used to be, when I mentioned how medical societies were formed, it was generally independent physicians that didn't have a network or didn't have any cohesion between them. But now you're talking about hospitals where you have hundreds or thousands of physicians that are connected in the same network, in the same group, or you know, private venture capitalist groups that are purchasing several groups of practices and bringing them together in larger groups, which is becoming very, very common in the state now. And really the trick is, it's like we talked about earlier, not just doing what the medical society did 200 years ago, but trying to figure out what we need to do to continue to be valuable in the future. So there are particular needs that physicians who are in an employed status may need that are different than an independent physician. Probably the most obvious one that we know that we've been dealing with is around the physician well-being stuff that we just talked about, because physicians have access to, they're called EAPs, employee assistance programs, that that virtually every hospital and large group in the state provides. But data shows us that physicians do not access those programs from their employers because they're concerned about it by having an impact on their employment. Even though they're through HR, they're concerned that someone knows and that may affect them when they come back and they have it's time to renegotiate their contract or whatever. And the contracting laws in the state and employment model are very difficult. And often there are restricted covenants and other things that if someone cannot extend their contract, they're prohibited from practicing in a 50-mile radius. And that can essentially mean you have to leave the state if you're in a one of the large metro areas. So programs like our physician well-being program are perfect for those physicians who need access to something like that, but don't have access to it somewhere else. The rural physician issue is something that it has been a challenge for me since day one. And honestly, some of the aspects of COVID-19 have actually probably made us better in representing that, because we have taken all of our meetings now, whether it's a board meeting, every committee meeting, are all open to all members, and all of them are available online through our digital platform, so that any physician anywhere in the state can be involved at any time without regard to their physical location. So those are some of the ways that we have begun to try and bring the fractured membership types that you just mentioned together. But ultimately, it goes back to what we've talked about at the beginning, which is just listening to the members and understanding and knowing that there is no one-size-fits-all solution to say, this is the value of the Colorado Medical Society. And some members are going to find this way more important than this. And then someone else isn't going to care about either of those, but this is exciting to them here. And so we really just need to be focusing on diversifying our resources and the perceived value of those resources from the members.
That's a great point. Let's maybe wrap with a little bit about your focus for the balance of this year or whatever timeline makes sense. What are some of the key initiatives within maybe some of the things you just referenced, but things that you're particularly excited about and focused on the last half of the year? And then maybe also let's talk a little bit about the MetaPoint, because you also are involved in leadership at a national level with other state medical societies. And so maybe talk about how some of the things that you're doing here, you know, influence the way you think about that, and also maybe things that you've borrowed from your peers in the other states that you're trying to incorporate.
Well, why reinvent the wheel if there are great ideas out there to steal? So, I'll start with the second question and my participation in the American Association of Medical Society Executives. And it's such a robust group of leaders from around the country who are CEOs of medical societies at the state level or at a national specialty society level or at the county medical society level or even the state specialty society level. And really ideas like the physician well-being program that grew from a cohort of individuals within AMZ that understood this problem and helped develop that LifeBridge product. That's something that that I definitely have derived from there. You know, interestingly enough, I worked on a model for remote workplace for medical societies at the Duval County Medical Society with support from other organizations who had done it at AMZ many years prior to COVID-19. So when COVID hit and we had to go virtual here in Colorado, there was already an education that I had had in that space that really helped us get a little bit of a jumpstart on that process maybe helped us respond to some of our member needs more quickly. Mm. From the first part of your question, the goals for the rest of the year, you know, one of the biggest is getting this well-being program off the ground. It was approved by the board. We're working on that and really working to get that spun up. Our hope is that we will have all of the technical and legal and every other hurdle that exists in such a program cleared by December to hopefully have a January 2023 kickoff on that program. And that will be a tremendous accomplishment and a tremendous resource for physicians around the state. I'm also really excited that we're going to be continually adopting and developing the lexicon that we use in our communications guidelines, style guides around some of these DEI issues that just haven't been part of the discussion in the past. So worked with a national organization, the Nova Collective out of Chicago, on helping us create some of those resources and tools. And we're already beginning to have some DEI trainings and education sessions that we're providing to our board members and that hopefully we'll be able to start providing to our physician members after that. Really taking a slow and deliberative approach to start at the top, make sure there's understanding, buy-in, everyone knows what we're going for and what we're trying to accomplish, and trying to really make a complete culture shift that DEI isn't something that we're doing outside of what we're regularly doing, but that those rules and guidelines around DEI become part of the culture and what we do every day.
That's great. Brian, let's wrap there for the moment. Plenty more to discuss, but thanks a ton for sharing a little bit about your perspective and your vision for the group. We're really excited. And as I said, we're really fortunate to have you here in Colorado and in leadership. And it's really great getting to know you and about the things that you're doing. So thanks again.
Thanks for having me, Tobin. Always great talking with you.
See you again soon for the next episode of Innovation for Alpha. Make sure to go to Innovation for Alpha for access to prior episode links, show notes, and other valuable resources. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any investment decisions, please consult with a professional. This show is copyrighted by Angel Indie Media, and written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.